Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show, January 3rd, 2010. This is, what, the fourth or fifth year with BBS now. Let's see, three and a half. I think we're in our almost fifth year now. That's a lot of shows here. Anyhow, as promised, we're going to continue on with last week and keep it going. And we'll have a live show, of course, on the 7th, which will be Thursday night. I'll talk to you in a bit, and here we go with a continuation of last week as promised.
Take advantage of maybe there might be a little time after this little wrap is done here so we can show you some of these very interesting books. Peace and love, and thank you very much. I love you.
Now we're going to get to hear the voice of experience. Dr. Fulton was healing people, putting people on fast when I was still riding a tricycle. He's been doing that for over 30 years. Director of the Health Institute of Chicago. Person who doesn't need too much of an introduction.
Everybody.
Carol.
What a surprise. And yet,
Gregory.
This is one of the most.
Very famous lady.
Excited moments of my life. You know, when you've been doing something so long that you think it's not worthwhile to anybody, but you keep on doing it. And I'm so very happy that Mr. Goldman is one of those persons that I taught to fast a long time ago. And certainly, when you fast, I was sharpening your thinking at first, when you fast, your life will change. There's no road back to where you were. That's what happened to me. And that's why I stand here today. And that's also why Mr. Gregory made the kind of change he made. He fasted. And it changed him. And if you want to change the life, a beautiful and a glorious and a happy life, fast, but do it correctly. Now, don't fast by my book, nobody else's book. You have someone to teach you how to fast. Because fast is important, but it's serious. Don't do it wrong. Prepare to fast so that you won't be hungry and suffering. I have yet to have a person tell me in over 30 years that they was hungry when they were fasting. And here's a challenge I gave them. If you get hungry, if you're doing exactly what I tell you, I will buy anything you want to eat. I have never bought a meal for anybody. Now, I do it because I'm not close and I'm not stingy. I'd buy it if they said they need it. But what happens in most cases is that they don't stop when I tell them. I tell everyone you stop fasting at 3 weeks. I give you a preparation, which is 1 week. And then after that 1 week, then you fast 3 weeks. Which will give you about a month preparation and fasting. Most of them will say when they reach 3 weeks, I want to go on longer. I want to go 40 days. There's a dear sister sitting here. I put her on a fast, not for her to go 40 days, but she went 40 days. And because fasting is such a rich experience, fasting unites you with your God. You didn't know that, did you? Besides, now, when I learned fasting as a child, we fasted for Easter, maybe some special day. But I'm talking about the therapeutic fasting, which will heal your body. If it's sick, get out of balance. I'm talking about the fasting that will cleanse your body, cleanse your mind, renew your body, and make you become younger if you've gotten older. Speaking from experience now. Speaking from experience now. But you have to prepare that. You can't eat today and stop tomorrow, because you get hungry and you grab whatever's in sight, then you'll get sick. But I'm talking about fasting so that you're never, never hungry. And when you go 21 days, 30 days, or 40 days, if your body needs the cleansing. Now, I said that to let you know that the reason for fasting is because we need cleansing. Fasting predates history. And I could go on back with you if there were time to tell you how fasting was discovered by man when they saw birds fasting and cleansing their bodies. Little cats and dogs will fast. If they get sick, you can't force them to eat. No animal, a bird, a cat, a dog can be forced to eat if they're hungry when they're sick. They go out and eat some green grass or something green, and as a result of that, when they come back from their fasting, they're healed and whole. And man discovered animals doing that eons of time ago. And they started fasting. They saw animals taking their beak and getting water and putting it in their rectum to give themselves a colonic. Animals that could hardly stand or a bird. And after the bird washed out his rectum, he began to fly away with energy. Man looked at that, and he began to make all kind of contraptions to wash himself out, and finally he's come down to the colonic. But he's got it washing the animal. You see, animals obey nature, and they obey God. And it's what man must learn, and that's how they have. You see, animals aren't sick like human beings. And there's no veterinarian running through the forest and in the trees to give shots and pills to animals. None. But animals eat so they can be healthy. Now, we eat anything and everything. Animal eats one thing. Animal doesn't drink anything while he's eating. Humans don't know any better. Animals will eat his grass or grain or whatever, and drink his water later, or drink it first. He will not drink it while he's eating. But humans don't know any better. They will drink two or three different things while they're eating. They'll drink juice. They'll drink coffee. They'll drink pop. And some beer. And some after-dinner wine. All of that while they're eating. Can you understand why we're so sick? They drink all that. They have it. And then on top of that, they have it ice cold. Now imagine what's going on down in here. You eating something hot, very hot, then put ice on top of it. You see the confusion to the body? This is why you can't talk to nobody 5 minutes before they don't talk about where they hurt or where they're sick, where they had surgery, somebody else needs surgery. Sick is the topic of conversation. We're always sick. And I can talk about how unnecessary it is. I don't care what your age is. I have not had a doctor's examination or treatment, and I'm not knocking any doctor. I just know how to be healthy, so I don't need him. Since 1955, 30 years. How could he need me? I could eat meat, fish, chicken, all that stuff 30 years ago. I don't need it. And every once in a while, somebody said, don't you get weak? You ought to let me show you them muscles. I said, now, which one you want, right or left, or can you stand both of them? You don't have to be weak. And remember this, the animals you eat don't eat meat. The cow doesn't eat meat. You have to have protein. You get no protein secondhand. I like first-hand things. I like it first. I like it the best. And when you get your fruit and vegetables and nuts and grain and seed from the good earth, then you will have good and better health. I can speak with authority. I've been doing this. And you know one thing? I've been treating people for over 30 years. I've never been sued. I've got no malpractice insurance. I've never been sued. I don't need it. In fact, I don't have no insurance. I don't need it. I want to leave somebody something when I go away. I can leave them something, but I never have aches or pains. I don't get sick. I get sleepy sometimes. I get tired sometimes because I work 24 hours of the day. That's the way I work. And because somebody's always sick, they call me from all over the country. East Coast to West Coast, they call me, and even foreign countries, I get letters and all that sort of thing where people are calling on me. If there's something wrong, I've been to the doctor, they can't find nothing wrong. If it's something wrong with what I mean, what should I eat to get well? How should I eat to get healthy? And many times when they come to me and ask me that question, I say, I do it. I tell you how to eat to be healthy, but you're not going to do it. You don't want to eat to be healthy. You just want to eat. You don't want to be healthy. Anything you go to somewhere and they're serving smorgasbord and you pile it on and pile it on and pile it on until it's dropping out and you keep on eating. You're eating too many different things. You eat too often and too much. You don't need the amount of food you eat. You don't need to eat as often as you eat. And you eat when you're not hungry. Eat because you're nervous or something. You eat because somebody else is eating. Are you eating because you want to fellowship with somebody? No, the only reason for eating is to grow new live cells in your body. And your cells are dying all the time. And when these cells die, new cells must come alive. But they must have the right kind of food to build cells. Food is to be a cell builder in your body. That's all it's for. It's not to taste good, give you a big stomach, and give you a big body, stop the appetite. Your eating is not for appetite. It's to grow cells in your body and to rejuvenate the cells in your body. Talking about health and nutrition, it's a great thing, and it's so much in demand now. It's in demand. It's needed because our food is ruined. There are 7,000 chemicals in the food we're eating. That's where your problem is. And then on top of that, I'm going to try to be as brief as I can, but on top of that, we got all of this food. That's why we need colonics, and that's why we need all these other things. We have 8 million people in America wearing a colostomy bag inside. And that's because the bowels didn't move when they should have moved. And because the food we ate constipated us. The food you eat should not constipate you. Food the animals eat don't constipate them. It's a good thing that the food that the hogs eat don't constipate them. Because if it did, you couldn't eat chitlins. They're bad enough as it is. So you need the kind of food that will be eliminated from your system. Ask any pathologist or anyone who's ever done an autopsy. Our colons get so thick and hard with waste material that if you drop it on the floor, it sounds like a brick. Now, I'm not making this up. A pathologist and any undertaker can tell you that, or anyone who's done an autopsy. We get too packed up inside here with food we didn't need to eat. Well, some of it starts with grandma and they had it, mama and everybody else feeding the baby. When the baby gets enough, it starts spitting it out and turn its head and follow it around with a spoon. Baby knows when it has enough. It's just these people don't know when the baby has enough. And you keep on feeding the baby, and finally the baby develops an appetite for incessantly eating all the time because it was forced on that baby when it couldn't help itself. So some of these, and you know what? We have among these 7 million people that are 100 pound overweight, a lot of them are children, small children. I've seen small children that are so much overweight, and it started when somebody fed them wrong. So let's take eating seriously. Rated Health Through Nutrition, the doctor here called the name, that name, and that's the first book I wrote in 1958. I wrote a book, Rated Health Through Nutrition. And I had some of the same things in it now that you can see in the newspaper, radio, and television, where they are now saying that vegetables and fruits and things would help with cancer. But when I came in this, I know when they're putting people in jail for saying that. It's in that book I wrote in Rated Health Through Nutrition in 1958. And you know what? They said it. You know what they're going to say? That they discovered it. They discovered it. You know, I guess the reason they didn't put me in jail like they did some of the others. Some of y'all know Earl Irons. Earl Irons was put in jail for just about food. Just, there's no crime, no criminal. Dr. Hoensy in Pennsylvania, they put him in jail and almost killed him about saying that food ought to be natural, like the grain of wheat is natural. The food, the bread ought to be natural. And Dr. Hoensy, and then some of you might know, Martin Pretorius came here. Came from California to Chicago, and he had to pay $30,000 for what he was saying about food. Well, you know, they didn't pay me no attention because they didn't think y'all was going to believe me. They didn't think y'all. I wasn't no threat. And I guess that's the reason they never bothered me. I wasn't no threat. They didn't think y'all was going to pay me any attention. But you're paying me some attention now, and now it's cleared away. Now, they are bringing it on. Ted Koppel was on, and Washington, D.C. was on television a few days ago, and he was talking about the food for cancer and all. I said, I remember you said food for cancer, they get you, they put you in jail. They find you. If you had a health food store, they put the store out of business. And people in professions had to be very careful, had to walk a chalk line. Now, he'll mind this reference, I'm sure, because I said this, because I thought maybe they would get me. I said to Mr. Gregory when I started him fasting, I said, Mr. Gregory, you ain't got no store, no health food store, and you ain't no doctor. You're not a nutritionist. You get out here and go to these colleges and schools, and you wake up these people. I had to have somebody to put up a fight for me. This is what I said to him. And believe me, I have had white people to say to me, what's wrong with Dick Gregory? He's got these children so they won't eat like they at the college. And somebody asked me about it. I said, well, maybe the children were eating wrong. I don't understand this. He's going here telling these children not to eat and getting these children to have letters written that they can't eat that. They have to eat some certain thing. They actually told me that. Well, did a good job, brother. Keep on. Go back there and some more schools, some more colleges, and tell them how they ought to eat. Because how we eat depends on how long we live, how well we'll feel, and how good a health we'll have. And not only that, you see, we have a lot of insanity coming now. We have a lot of, not only insanity, but we have a lot of people
Saves Pittsburgh. Their TV show is going to, Soul Train is going to be airing June 15th. Which is Saturday at noon. And, of course, they worked with Dick Gregory. They're going to give us a little bit of conscious comedy that's going to inspire us to a better way of life. Daryl and Dwayne Mooney.
Was Alvina Fulton. I don't know if I have a continuation of that. I'll have to look around for that. She's amazing. And so now we'll go into some other stuff that we've done. And if you want to hear the first part of that, go to last week's show, as I said earlier. So now what we'll do is we will exit that one and we will go ahead and put on another one, which is fun. And this will be a little bit about nutrition, which I think you'll enjoy. We always have a little bit of fun out here on Sunday night, a little live and a little recorded, kind of a mix situation, you might say. I'd like to find that other part of that was.
So you're the one, okay.
Yeah, I'm the one.
Probably could. That was back in 65. You know, I could call
your local 65, 85. Okay. What are we going
to get into? She's amazing.
Well, I want to continue on with this vitamin thing. It seemed to get a lot of interest yesterday.
Totally amazing. Now let me get the levels set.
And so I want to continue on with the B complex vitamins, all of the different things we use in the Excalibur formula. And yesterday we talked about. We only got through three
the
of them.
The Excalibur formula, by the way, is now the Pyridine formula. It's evolved from that formula.
And we were just finishing up on para-aminobenzoic acid and what it does in a vitamin formulation. And, of course, one of my favorite things I like to say about that is that skin cancer, you know, of the millions of people that go to the beaches, about 300,000 new cases of skin cancer surface annually. And the majority of these cancers are called basal or squamous cell cancers. And basal cell cancer begins as a small red raised sore. If you, those of you out there have got a sunburn, you start getting a small red raised sore. Then it slowly enlarges and displays a gray or a pearly color. It's sort of like a sore that turns into a mole. The center of the lesion becomes depressed or ulcerated, and then sometimes it'll heal. And the basal cell carcinoma sometimes resembles a patch of psoriasis or subhepatic dermatitis. And so anyway, this type of skin cancer is a less deadly type, but still it's kind of not the best thing to have. And the squamous cell carcinoma begins as a raised red sore with a hard surface, which eventually grows inward in a circular fashion and may ulcerate. This is a more deadly cancer because it has a tendency to spread internally into the body. And together, these two skin cancers account for about 90% of all the cases of skin cancer and about 30% of them for the deaths from skin cancer. And there's a third type of skin cancer called malignant melanoma is the least common, which around there's about 9,000 cases, according to my last study, was back in 1976. And the melanoma type is the most deadly, accounting for 70% of all skin cancer deaths. And they usually begin as a birthmark or a mole. And while most of these heavy pigmented dots are taken for granted by most people, are not cancerous, one in a million may develop into a malignant melanoma. And if you have a doctor and you're worried about one, or you've got one that stays sore all the time, a mole, you should have it looked at, because it's a very simple procedure where they just put a little Novocaine in the area and then remove it. So it's a painless thing. It takes about 5 minutes, and it's a whole lot better to get it done now than wait till it's infesting your body. And PABA, para-aminobenzoic acid, taken daily internally, helps reduce the susceptibility factor of these relatively common skin diseases. And we use a large amount of it in the Excalibur formula just for that reason. I myself am out in the sun all the time. And every once in a while, I'll start scratching a mole, and they'll get active. But I haven't had any cancerous problems yet, but it's not to say that we can't. But secondly, when we've talked about cancer before, and that is that it's hard to tell what carcinogenic really means. To some people, it means something, and others it doesn't. That's why there's never been a continuous flow of information stating whether this or that is cancerous or non-cancerous. Nobody really knows whether. Like for a while, saccharin was supposedly carcinogenic. Then it wasn't. And then it went back off the market and back on the market. And it really doesn't matter whether something is carcinogenic or not. When you take it in, preferably you would avoid chemicals in most cases. But if you have a large amount of the B-complex family in your body and your immune system is there, chances are you will not come down with cancer. The cancer usually develops as a B-deficiency vitamin first. And then what happens is there's a runaway factor of a female hormone in male and female called estrogen, which then causes protein deposits to form in parts of the body where they shouldn't, which then causes a blockage of oxygen flow into these areas and a high constituency of carbon dioxide. And when you get a high level of carbon dioxide, then the cancer type viral cell lives on that. So basically the cancer is living on cells that are choked up or dead healthy cells. So they become very healthy in dead healthy cells. So the idea is very simple to eliminate that, is to keep the circulation working properly, and that's what the B-complex family does. The final thing I want to say now about skin cancer before I leave the subject of it is because the ozone layer is not as strong as it used to be, and because we have larger amounts of ultraviolet coming in, and because this hurts the amount of vitamin D coming into the body, we definitely should take large amounts of B vitamins and avoid certain kinds of sunlight. When I say certain kinds of sunlight, each latitude of the world has a particular angle of attack from the sun. The ray strikes at a certain area. For example, I'm sure, Jim, you've noticed that if you go up in the mountains and lay out by, a pool or something, you get a different kind of sunburn or suntan at a different rate than you do, say, going down to the beach where you're familiar with the way the sun behaves. You ever notice that?
Of course, right.
Yeah. Well, a lot of that is caused by the rarities in the atmosphere. It's caused by the differences in the angle of incidence or attack of the sun rays. And so, like, I pretty much hardly ever get a sunburn in Southern California, but I can go down to Hawaii, which is further towards the equator, and go out there for an hour and end up with sunburn because of the angle is different. My body's not used to that. Now, once you get into an area, your body will articulate itself and stabilize itself into the climate of the sun in that particular area. That takes a few years to acclimatize, basically, to the sun. And then, of course, realize that when you do, then your B-complex factors will change, your D-simulation from the sun will change. So it's necessary to take into consideration. And to be safe when you go into a new area, what we always do, you know, like, for example, around the house here, we'll probably take maybe 8 or 10 Excaliburs a day. When we get out in Hawaii or somewhere, even though we're on vacation, we'll go up to 15 or 20 just to make the adjustments. But what that eliminates is the number one, the effect of where you fall asleep for 3 days because you're breathing fresh air again, you're not used to it, eliminates that effect, which is an adjustment effect. And oftentimes I go with my friends and they'll pick up colds and different things because they don't adjust because they aren't taking proper nutrition. So nutrition is very important when you're traveling, especially more so oftentimes than around the house. Now the next vitamin that we have in our formula is one called B15, pangamic acid. And it was first developed by Dr. Ernest T. Krebs, who I've had the honor of working with through the National Health Federation. And it became very popular in Russia, and still is, as a matter of fact. It's a supplement for athletes training for the Olympics. And it's also a rejuvenating factor for people with heart disease. Now, remember, we've talked a lot about heart disease, and we've made statements many times that a meal today has 50 times less vitamin E in it than it did 50 years ago, the same meal. That also includes other vitamins, which means that the cholesterol levels are going to be higher, the calcium levels are going to be lower, the vitamin D levels are going to be lower, and we need to have that B15 in there. Now, the Russians claim that if you take B15 daily, it's almost impossible to have a heart attack because the heart muscles will contain adequate amounts of oxygen and subsequently low levels of cholesterol. And it also has helped in the prevention of carbon monoxide poisoning, which is what happens when people drive on the freeways. As a matter of fact, a while back I had a vitamin C formula that I came out with and made for a limited period of time, and I had the B15 in that also. It worked very well. And a deficiency of, realize that B15 just is one of the great oxygen carriers within the body. And, of course, naturally, it's going to be an excellent cancer preventative vitamin. And a deficiency of pangamic acid will cause diminished oxygen in the cells, hypoxia, heart disease, glandular and nervous disorders. So these are some of the symptoms of it. And we put about 50 milligrams in. If you take a dosage of Excalibur, you'll receive 50 milligrams of vitamin B15 daily. And 50 milligrams is, you know, for the price that Excalibur is marketed for, it's a heck of a buy because if you were to go to a health food store and get the Angamic 15, for example, you're going to pay $14.95 just for a 50-milligram daily supply for a month of B15. So we're including it in a slightly higher price, but you're getting, you know, 54 other vitamins along with it in synergism.
Dr. Bell, weren't the Soviets using massive doses of B15?
Yes, they were. They were taking up to 500 milligrams a day. And with Excalibur, because of the other coenzymes that are in there that synergistically work with B15, I would say that you probably assimilate the B15 at 50 milligram dosages as well as you probably would taking 150 without the synergistic action of getting it into the system. B17, B12, these are all the nitrosamine family. And because they're all in one family and one synergistic effect in the vitamin, it's very effective. If you are a hard, hard-running athlete in the L.A. smog, like some of these people that insist on running around UCLA at traffic time, which I see when I'm up there, and part of the UCLA track is along a busy street that brings traffic from Santa Monica up to Bel Air and Beverly Hills, I see these people really sweating in the smog, you know. I would definitely probably go down and get some Angamic 15 and supplement the Excalibur with it because of the extreme stress that you're placing yourself under, along with additional amounts of vitamin C, probably about 2 or 3 grams a day. Now, the next one is that we have in there is one that you should get daily. We used to get it daily, but what happened was with this particular vitamin is that as soon as we started taking the husks off of rice, processing the flour and making it, bleaching it, making all of the food processes, it's one of the first vitamins to escape, and it's known as one of the strongest anti-cancer vitamins, and that, of course, is the B17, controversial vitamin. We use B17, the way we get it in there is we use almond bran, bitter almond bran, as a source. Bitter almond bran is an excellent source of B15. It's a whole lot better to take it through a vitamin supplement. It's not one that's outlawed for public consumption like apricot kernels by the FDA, so it's one that's kind of in the gray area that nobody's really hassling us about at this point in time. And it's often used in vitamins by conscientious types of formulators that know how to prevent cancer. And I'm not saying that I occasionally don't supplement the almond bran that's in the Excalibur on my own with apricot kernels, which I do buy and keep in storage. But I primarily only do the apricot kernels when I haven't been behaving properly and I've eaten a bunch of bad foods from being on the road. Around here, I can eat mostly raw foods and don't have to worry about it. But anyhow, Laetrile is a derivative of the nitrosides, and it's a very powerful cell oxidizer, and it falls in the complex B12 through B17 family. It was first synthesized from a compound in the apricot kernel, once again, by 1952 by Ernest Krebs, Jr., that was his son. The new compound was patented and called Laetrile. Now, amygdalin, or B17, consists of two molecules of sugar, one molecule of benzaldehyde, and one molecule of cyanide, whereas Laetrile consists of a benzene ring and cyanide. But unlike amygdalin, it contains glucuric acid in the place of glucose sugar. Amygdalin B17 is a nutrient used in body maintenance functions, as are other vitamins. But Laetrile is used in the treatment of oxygen starvation diseases such as cancer. So when we use the amygdalin form, which is the natural form, what happens is if you were to have cancer, okay, and you would have this in your body, it would release a small amount of cyanide on the tumor site. Now, if you don't have cancer, when the amygdalin goes into the body, there is a large amount of rhodinase in the body, which cancer cells don't have, and rhodinase immediately counteracts the cyanide and becomes neutral. And this, of course, is healthy because when the cyanide comes in a small amount and it's tied up in another molecule, in a compound molecule, so it's not even going to be released. It's almost like saying that salt is bad because it has sodium and chlorine in it. But sodium chloride, per se, especially sea salt, is not bad at all in small amounts. But the elements of sodium and chlorine by themselves are deadly. Well, that's the same thing cyanide is in the B17 apricot kernel. It's just part of a molecular structure that is totally harmless. And as a matter of fact, when you take it in your body, it will help the body produce more rodentase, because rodentase is what breaks it down. But if it's, like I say, if it's not present, then the only thing that could be is a cancer situation, and then the cyanide will release on the tumor site and destroy the cancer. That's how it works. Now, a lot of researchers had problems working just with Laetrile by itself, because they didn't understand when you separate the Laetrile from the amygdalin, what happens is you have to put in coenzymes for the body to assimilate it. Otherwise, the body will just reject the whole thing totally, and even regardless of whether you've got cancer. So Harold Manner, for example, over in Loyola University, found that if he used a vitamin A in the form of A-mulsin, which is a vitamin A like we use in the Excalibur, it's one that does not go through the liver, it's water-soluble, then you will have a proper amount of enzymes to help balance the other end of this reaction. So anyway, it's quite interesting just studying the B17. Now, the name, by the way, the compound, for example, which contains the cyanide, is usually labeled with a suffix, nitro, spelled N-I-T-R-I-L-E. And since Krebs' new compound contains cyanide, and since it was lava-rotary, and lava-rotary, there's two things. There's dextrorotary and lava-rotary. And what happened was, when you talk about dextrorotary, you're talking about spinning light one direction in the body. And if it's lava-rotary, it goes to the left, which is a good way. If it's dextrorotary and spins to the right, a chemical or a vitamin or an enzyme would not be that in the body, because things that go to the right or do light spin to the right are usually poisonous to the body, okay? And the lava rotary plus the nitrile is where the first three letters of Laetrile came from, and the last five letters came from nitrile, and the word Laetrile came from that. But we often talk about the body, and this is a good example, we often talk about the body as being a unit of light energy, you know? And remember at the seminar that we did last time, I drew out on the blackboard the actual formation of a hormone from a mineral in the ground, and along that explanation I was able to show on the board how that the body turns the mineral into a unit of energy called light, which the next seminar will go into. It's kind of hard to do it without some visual aid. The amygdalin, B17, is not something just because the Krebs father and son team began to work with it in this country. It was first used by a Chinese herbalist, Pen So, in the year 2800 B.C., and it has been used intermittently by various groups ever since that time. So some people think that because B17, you know, is just now coming into the vitamin scene in America, that it's new. It's not. You know, no vitamin is new. They've always been around. We're just discovering them. But it's been around for, you know, like 3,000-4,000 years. Now, cyanide, you know, is locked into the sugar molecule. It is also found in over 2,000, it is normally found in over 2,000 known unrefined food and grasses. A concentration of about 2 to 3% Laetrile is found in whole kernels of most fruits, including apricots, apples, cherries, peaches, plums, nectarines, and some in different brands where we use it from, and some 70 plants commonly fed to animals as fodder. A sprouting seed, like wheatgrass, for example, produces 10 to 30 times as much Laetrile as does a mature plant. Few citrus fruits contain Laetrile, okay? Shelled and unshelled apricot kernels usually have 2 to 3% amygdalin and are also excellent sources of protein and fatty acids and minerals. Now, Laetrile, the B17 derivative, has been legalized in several states. I went through the legalization process with the National Health Federation when this happened in Chicago. And Laetrile is manufactured and used over 17 countries throughout the world, including Mexico, Germany, Italy, Belgium, and the Philippines. And it is, and once again, I have to say, it's a very highly selective substance. You know, and DNA, the next thing I want to talk about is DNA in this relationship. Now, I'll be talking about it further when we get into the latter part of DNA and the effect of the receptor, which is a life extension device that we've developed. But in DNA, light spin is important, and when the wrong elements, such as microwaves, radar, ultraviolet from the sun, etc., these kinds of things, are obtained in the body, A mispolarization or disease begins at the DNA level. And there are 6 billion bases joined together to form the DNA. Now, realize that the polarities of the sugars and phosphates, you've got 4 basic amino acids in DNA, adenine, thymine, cytosine, and guanine, okay? And these sugars and phosphates must be in unison, or an inversion will cause a new base amino acid and will actually establish polarity-wise upside down, okay? Phosphate with phosphate, sugar with sugar, versus sugar-phosphate combinations that build these little ladders of energy inside the body. And the elements attract each other because of the opposite directional spinning of the electrons in what's called the H-bonds, and it's not because of the different chemical compositions. Okay, so these H-bonds are all determined electrically and not chemically. And so when Dr. Cohn at NASA began to do some research on cancer, and he found, because he is advocating negative ionization as a preventive and a treatment for that, because he found that a cell normally has a strong negative charge on it, but if it's getting too much smog or too much of these different radar waves and all these other kinds of things. As a matter of fact, speaking of that, there was just an article on the news the other night that said the average person in Los Angeles in this area, I think, is getting 1 milliwatt per cubic centimeter of radar, just from the radar sets around here, which is exactly the maximum allowable amount by the FDA or the FTC outside of a microwave oven. So we're right on the threshold.
What radar sets?
What radar sets? All right, have you ever looked up on right above you there at Palos Verdes there?
Uh-huh.
About San Pedro?
Yeah.
Those are early warning radars. I used to work on those. That's part of the radar, the early warning NORAD setup. There's one down here at the airport. The ILS equipment and all of, at LAX, anybody living around LAX,
mm-hmm.
There's lots of radar up there. That's how they vector those guys in the fog. That's some pretty, and all those jets, when those jets come in, they have radars on the 747 to determine the landing rate, the distance to the Earth. They use radar to determine the distance between each other. There's other radar installations back over here in these mountains over towards Edwards that comes over in this area.
So we're picking up a pretty healthy dose of radiation.
Uh-huh. And then all of the ships out sea, a lot of these foreign freighters that come by over on the other side of Catalina and outside the continental United States over 2 miles out,
mm-hmm.
carry radars that are higher than the power levels that we normally use in this country. Believe me, we get a lot of radar. They use it for distance measuring, DME equipment, okay? We get it all the time in Southern California. The maximum legal amount that you can have around the microwave on the outside for that unit to be sold is what everybody in L.A. gets continually anywhere in Los Angeles. It was on the news the other night.
I missed that, but that is interesting.
Yeah, so that is another reason why you want to take the B-17 or the Excalibur, and it's another reason why I won't take my receptor off when I'm around town. I mean, I will not. Because you can feel the difference in Los Angeles so easily now with one of those things on versus one of those things off. Because, once again, you get this, the DNA, when it's complete, okay, but it's in the wrong sequence. It puts out the wrong sequence of genetic information. And what happens is, when you put the receptor on, for example, you reestablish the homogeny of the magnetic orientation of the DNA. And this is done by the inductive energy. But if it's not done properly, the wrong bases start to get rejected. And this is exactly what happens when you begin to get cancer. And there are lots and lots and lots of subclinical cases of cancer running around. And what I would clearly define a subclinical case of cancer is a person with a negative attitude, a feeling of depression or paranoia or insomnia that hasn't manifested any physical symptoms yet. But at any point in time, if their molecular and their vibratory frequencies break down, their resistance internally breaks down on a chemical level, then they're going to come out with these different kinds of cancers. And if you don't think there aren't a lot of people running around, that every time they have an ailment, they run down to the doctor looking for cancer. The doctor says you don't have it, but they keep running back and they're afraid. They don't know whether they're going to get it or not. These are the kinds of people that definitely need to get into the B-17 and the B-15 treatments, and it will really turn their lives around and make them feel normal and whole again. Anyway, the B-17 shows great properties of rotating the planes of polarized light to the left and the crystalline sugar to the right, which it's supposed to. And under the influence of ultraviolet light coming from the sun, the plane of polarization is shifted to the left. and the proper orbital electron spinning and the phosphate base is restored. Thus, you know, if we have a constant source of B17 in the diet, you can be sure that the polarity of DNA will be consistent, and then the body immune systems will be up, especially cancer, will be something that, you know, nothing to even worry about at all. So a prolonged deficiency in B17, of course, may lead to diminished resistance to malignancy, and amygdalin can reduce the size of cancer tumors, erase the accompanying pain, inhibit the growth of cancer cells. In addition, it favorably will regulate the blood pressure and may have an anti-arrhythmic anesthesia-sizing effect. So it helps with people with heart arrhythmias, too, like B15 will do. Okay? So I think that kind of sums up the B-complex family in the Excalibur formula. And I won't have time today. Tomorrow we'll get into the vitamin C, and that's a whole great big long thing, you know. And plus we'll get more into DNA tomorrow, and we'll talk about the receptor and how the gemstones and the receptors work, and then from that we'll go into the minerals.
Well, that finishes that one up. We'll just jump right into another one here. Got a little bit of time left. And we're just having a lot of fun just covering a lot of old stuff here. A lot of new stuff here. Just basically stuff, you might say. So we'll kick right up this next little hot little number here. Just got to be careful I don't go too far. Run over the time and you guys miss out. Because it gets edited, you know. Can't have that. So we'll see what's when this thing is going to start up here. Hope you're all having a new good new year. These new years are always the same. They're new. That's pretty common with a new year. We do like
now, here we go. Man expresses himself on the physical plane with his inventions and his achievements in science. And everything that he presents is nothing more than a reconstitution of his own atomical workings within his body. For example, an automobile engine. An automobile engine, through the carburetor, takes oxygen and mixes it with gas. This is drawn into the cylinder pressure, and the piston goes up and compresses that air mixture. Then a spark plug ignites it, causing a combustion action, pushing the spark or the piston back down, which is on a crankshaft, creating work. Then there's two valves. One valve open to let the air charge and gas charge in, and then close during for combustion. And then as the piston went down, another valve opened, and we had exhaust. In an automobile engine, one of the problems that lies is improper combustion causes a building up of carbon, which causes the combustion not to be very accurate or efficient anymore, so the engine loses horsepower. The second thing that happens in an automobile engine is the exhaust valve starts getting a carbon incrustation as a result of this problem down here of improper combustion. So when the cylinder comes up, you get leakage in the pressures and you don't get complete combustion. The human body, strangely enough, has the same problem. The compression cycle is when the food comes down into the small intestine and is compressed because of peristaltic action. It actually is under pressure. Okay, and then when the bile comes in and the insulin comes in from the pancreas and is ignited by the oxygen and electricity, it creates a small pressure. And then the ileocecal valve opens and that pressure forces that fiber out. So it's the completion of that combustion cycle going through that ileocecal valve that forces this thing right here, and this peristalsis continues. So it's a pressure combustion cycle. Human beings have the same problem. They take the fruit, they eat vegetables, they get improper combustion in the small intestine. This causes unburnt materials to go out, and this ileocecal valve becomes jammed. And pretty soon what happens is this material here gets halfway through here and then starts going backwards and pushing it right back up in the small intestine. And that's when you start getting into disease conditions, and one of those is cancer of the colon. So you begin to see the comparison between an ordinary automobile engine, understand how it works and how the body works. It's really not that complicated. It's understand we've got to have clean burning or clean digestive by good, adequate habits, by understanding what kind of gasoline we're taking into our systems. And by keeping this system clean, in an automobile engine, every once in a while we take the heads off and give it a valve job. In the colon, a little colonics, and if you don't want to go get a colonic, a pumping enema is highly suggested. So this removes the sluggish, tired feeling within ourselves when we understand to keep the system flowing properly. 2,000 years ago they were doing this. It even mentions it in the Bible. They're using it with gourds. Okay? Now, one of the important things that this will help you do is one of my problems. I was a very sick person. This is how I got into medicine. I was born with polio. Right now, a slightly sunken chest. I have a scar right here from an appendix operation where I had a wiped out colon. Okay, I had asthma so bad that I'm 6 years old, they used to put tubes up in my nose to drain them. And I had some other diseases too. So I was sick, and the doctors used to give up on me. I was the sickest kid around, but I became very healthy by mastering all these things. But one problem I used to have is every year in the fall, the Asian flu would come around. Which, you know, they'd make up all these flus, and they'd come around, and I'd get them. Then the springtime would come, everybody's healthy, and I'd come down with a flu in the springtime, and there wasn't even going around a virus at that time. What was happening was, I was getting the flu, the virus had settled in my stomach, and during the winter we have a tendency to keep ourselves warm. We find that by eating denser foods in the wintertime, remember I was a meat eater then too, this would impact that colon, that virus would be lodged in here. Springtime would come, I'd start exercising, getting out, my body would say, let's eat a little bit of fruits here. I'd start eating fruit and I'd get a slight elimination. I'd automatically detoxify to a degree because our bodies are trained to do that. And what happens is I'd open up part of this wall of this intestine right here, and the virus would be exposed to the bloodstream. So I'd pick up last year's virus, and down I'd go with the disease again. This happens to a lot of people. So it's called reinfection. You know, a lot of people reinfect themselves, especially with the runny nose and cold viruses. That's the most notorious one, and that stores in this large intestine here. So now in the body, when this is working, we assimilate the minerals. Minerals represent 5% of our body, but they control 95% of the enzyme and the digestion of vitamins in the body. So the mineral controls the entire body. That's homeopathic medicine. That's the science of that change. I like to look at minerals as vibration. Now, minerals are taken up in the large intestine and carried up to the brain and stored in the brain cells in the mitochondrion of each cell inside the brain. They are released by the thinking process, which is produced by action on the physical plane when the human body digests food in the Krebs cycle, producing body heat and magnetism in the presence of prana carried in the air supply, and then has an encounter with another being or another energy. This releases mineral. There's quite a bit that's going on to cause this to take place. And you can, not only can you know whether you're deficient in minerals or not, but you can do a simple analysis on your cells and tell which minerals you're deficient in. Example, we have three classes of minerals, and they're divided into vibration or octaves, which I'll cover in a few minutes. Okay, the first class, I always do it backwards, the first class are low frequencies. These are minerals like iron, copper, things like that. Then we have a middle, which is chrome. Remember, chrome on automobiles. And then we have the high frequency, which is gold. And all the precious metals that go with gold, vanadium, titanium, things like that. In our bodies, we have three different nervous networks that distribute this electricity, these electrical pulses, at different vibrations determined by the minerals. The lowest frequency network of distribution in our bodies is the autonomic nervous system. When copper and zinc and iron are digested by the body and carried up to the brain, this causes the subconscious body functions to take place, circulation, breath, respiratory, heartbeat, things like that. When you digest the middle octave, the thinking process becomes conscious and is distributed through the sympathetic nervous network. Thoughts, when you dissolve chrome and all the middle octave elements, you like, let's go to the store, let's I'm cold, I feel warm. These basic movement pragmatic feelings come from the dissolution of those minerals. Then when you dissolve the precious elements like gold and titanium and molybdenum and vanadium and things like that, the thoughts are higher of the spiritual nature, of God, of the inner ways of life. And these are distributed through what is called the vagus nerve or the parasympathetic nervous network, the 10th cranial nerve, whatever you call that nervous network. It's the power supply that runs a little voice inside of our head that tells us to do or not to do something that ego often goes against. And then, of course, a little voice is usually right, and the ego, through action, shows us that we should have done what we were supposed to do by listening to ourselves a little bit closer. So if you find yourself deficient, if you're anemic, you know you're deficient in iron, if you're
If you're too lackadaisical and you can't think about basic survival, then you're lacking in the middle frequency vibrations. If you're having problems with meditation, you're preoccupied when you're trying to reach out to God, then you can bet that you're deficient on the higher frequency minerals. I mean, this is just basic mineral deficiencies that we're talking about now. So, the first thing that I always tell people is to get on a program of cleansing. I usually recommend coffee enemas if you can't afford to go to a clinic or there isn't one around. Some people don't have them near them, but do oxygen therapy and things like that. We just do coffee enemas. And we use kava coffee. It's a very good coffee for that. And it's a tremendous high when you do an enema. Believe me, I know I've done many of them. It may not sound all that exciting, but once you've done a few of them, they can be very habit-forming. And it's a good habit to form. And I always recommend that you use kava because it's a low-acid coffee. You don't want a decaffeinated coffee. You want a deacidified coffee. Because caffeine in the large intestine has a drawing effect. It draws all the toxins and poisons out of the body. Then it stimulates the liver. The liver then puts large amounts of bile. Bile causes the stool to look very yellow, like a young baby. But it has a tremendous cleansing effect on the body. One coffee enema will cleanse you for about 2 days. If you're doing any fasting, I'm sure a lot of you do fasting, about the third day of the fast is a good time to start doing the enemas along with the colon therapy. Now, the next thing that happens then is you have to break the wall down. And most people have worms. Worms produce about 33 different poisons into man. And the problem is not so much the worms. The poison of the worms, when the worms go to the bathroom and leave their waste material behind, causes sluggishness in our brains and bodies and minds. But the main thing where we get in trouble with worms is when they lay eggs, they get in the bloodstream, and then the young worms then are moved up into the lymphatic system. And so you have problems with the lymphatic system. The lymphatic system is a water network that, in one level, releases perspiration, but it gets rid of all the poisons throughout the body. And it also oftentimes causes cancer of the lymphatics. And I once found one worm in one lady's brain. We found it through iridology. And she was having seizures like epilepsy, because I worked a lot with epileptics. And we found that we just put her on the normal colon therapy thing and in a good cleansing program, and we got rid of the worm that was in her brain, and their seizures went to zero. The doctors were absolutely up against the wall. It was found by accident. So, I mean, these are some of the complications that we've run into not understanding the body and not understanding how worms can affect us. And about 9 out of 10 people have worms. I had worms. I had lots of them, and I didn't even know it. And I had never eaten... And eating pork since I was a small child. That's usually where pork is usually the best source of worms because they can't be destroyed by cooking in pork. Certain fruits, if not washed properly, is another source. But the main source of worms is pork. Now, the way that we have in our body what is called a wave motion. When you swallow, you can stand on your head, you'll still assimilate the food. The wave motion takes place by a vibration called peristalsis. In the pyramids that we develop, to wear on your heads, we developed one with titanium. Titanium worn on the body has a peristolic effect, so it aids in the colon and it aids in the digestive processes of the body. Okay, now go ahead and change it. Okay, now we'll talk about electricity. Okay, now, electricity is something that people really don't understand, so I'm going to have to go into the very basics. And be sure in the next 2 or 3 slides on here, if you're going to be around tomorrow when we go into the more difficult things to understand.
We'll have to stop there because we're running out of time, and electricity is going to take a little while, so we'll start with that next week. It's always fun to continue with these little discussions. So we'll see you this Thursday live. Happy New Year.